world where only the strong survive. There comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
Welcome back to the Entrepreneur Showdown. My name is Joe Cassandra. Across from me, debating everything I say, will be Dan Franks. In round one, we're going to be looking at an interview by Jamie Tardy with MJ DeMarco on Fastlane Entrepreneurship. You're going to want to get on that. In round two, we're going to be looking at how to get out of a funk. And we're going to be talking with Tim Page and how he gets out of his funks.
That's right. Tim Page, he's another newer podcaster. So I look forward to putting up the dukes and battling for ultimate supremacy with him. But before we do get onto the showdown, want to remind everybody to go to www.entrepreneurshowdown.com for today's show notes and everything else that is Entrepreneur Showdown. And also, while you're in iTunes, do us a favor and give us a 5-star review if you like what you're hearing. Give us some feedback, let us know what we can do better, and we can't wait to bring you more exciting content. So with that, let's get on to the showdown.
Round one.
All right, we're here at the Entrepreneur Showdown, round one. What we're going to be looking at today, we're going to actually be looking at an interview. We're going to be looking at Jamie Tardy's actually second interview of MJ DeMarco. Jamie, she has her site, eventualmillionaire.com. She interviews just millionaires, and she gets their advice, their story, all that good stuff. And we'll definitely link her site up below. And then MJ DeMarco, he's a millionaire. He sold one of his sites, limos.com, he actually sold it twice. He sold it once for many millions, and that the company that bought it kind of went broke, and then he rebought it and then rebuilt it up. It's a great story that you can actually read in his book, Millionaire Fastlane. We'll definitely link that up below. I heard about MJ probably, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, and he was the one that kind of got me into starting something online. Like I first got into online musings by listening to Pat Flynn, and then he interviewed MJ, and then I bought MJ's book, and then that's when like all the ideas started coming to me. He's a very direct individual. We'll hopefully have him on at some point in the future, but we're going to jump right into it's about a 45-minute interview, but we're just going to take out the bite-sized pieces. But he has some very debatable topics, which we're going to touch on. And he first starts out the interview just talking about how the market is kind of a selfish place. Like we as consumers, we're always looking to, hey, this is what's in it for me. Well, how is this going to help me? How is this going to make my life easier? Me. And he said to build a product, to build a business, you need to stop thinking that they all care about you, that they all care about your story, your struggles to get this product to market. They don't care about that. They just want to care about, hey, what is your product or business going to do for me?
Yeah, and he kind of flips the tables on what a lot of the bloggers and authors and online entrepreneurs, he kind of flips the table on what their philosophy is as far as creating your business. A lot of them will say, picture your, what do you call it?
Your ideal lifestyle.
You know, build your lifestyle and then work backwards to do what it takes to get there. So that's all very self-motivated. Whereas MJ comes out and says, if you think like that, you're not going to make any money. You need to put yourself in the other people's shoes, you know, the consumer's shoes, and think about and do the exact same thing only from their point of view instead of your own, and then create your business that way based on what they need, not necessarily what you need.
So how do you feel about that? Do you think you should do that? Hey, can think forward. What's your end result? Do you want to be on Oprah or whatever the hell you want to do? And you work backwards from there. Which I know Michael Stelzner, he was on Eventual Millionaire as well, and that was one thing he mentioned is how he connects the dots, looking forward but then going backwards.
Yeah, and I think there's both ways to look at it, and I can see both points of view. MJ's way of picking out what the consumer wants and then working towards that to me, that's kind of standard business practice, and it goes exact opposite of the lifestyle business. The whole idea of working for yourself, to me, is trying to design that lifestyle that you want to live on your own terms as opposed to living on someone else's terms. But his philosophy is living on someone else's terms. It's not working for yourself. So I feel that maybe his philosophy might be better for developing a successful and super profitable business. But if you're going to be working really hard, and he gave some examples of people that work 80-hour weeks to get to where they want to go, but that goes exactly against what a lot of entrepreneurs want. A lot of entrepreneurs are willing to sacrifice a little bit of the money for a lot of the freedom, to get a lot more freedom, even if it means a little less money. So I think his philosophy works well if all you're worried about is making the most money. But if you really are trying to build this lifestyle and trying to have a little bit of life for yourself and your family, and money's not the main concern, then maybe his philosophy might not be the best to follow.
But say you are just thinking about that lifestyle, then aren't you you're just thinking about the money? Because you're trying to design this perfect lifestyle, and when you design a perfect lifestyle, you have to put dollar amounts to it. Hey, I want to live in Italy. That's where my wife and I want to retire. But we have to put a dollar amount to that. So you're chasing the money, pretty much.
You're chasing the money, but I think maybe it's the level of money that you're chasing. You know, obviously MJ DeMarco is chasing the millions and millions and multi-millions, and he's achieved that. So he can definitely speak better than you or I or most others as far as making this huge profit. But say, for instance, you guys living in Italy, you guys could theoretically drop everything and move there today, as long as you can create some kind of quote-unquote lifestyle business to do while you're out there, where your location is completely, you know, independent of your business, and you don't necessarily have to have this multi-million dollar venture going. It can be, you know, X thousand a month you're making, and you can sustain that lifestyle that you like, and you designed it based on your needs, not the consumer's needs. So I think that there are different levels of this. Yes, you have to at some point be, you know, have a monetization strategy, have some way to make money, but it doesn't have to be a direct fight with what you need. It can be a combination of what the consumer wants and what you want. It doesn't have to be 100% putting yourself in their shoes, or else you might make lots of money and be super unhappy.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things he talks about is and it's very polarizing, because you see all the time online, hey, follow what you love, and if you love writing books, just keep writing books, and one day you're going to sell millions, just because if you stay disciplined, da-da-da, the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000-hour type stuff that you read. And he's saying, which goes against a lot of this lifestyle stuff that you're talking about, he's saying just no, screw all that passion. Hey, you love to... I did a lot of acting. When I was in school, I wanted to be an actor, but sometimes it's just not going to happen. It's not going to work out that way. And he's saying, forget about that passion. Just look at, hey, what does the market want? Cater to them, suck up to them. And that's where you're going to find your idea and your pile of gold.
Yeah. And he comes out and says, his exact quote was, don't do what you love, do what the market loves. And then that will make you the money to do what you love. So he's 100% behind his philosophy of researching the market or picking something out that the market needs more than picking something out that, you know, you need or want. And if you pick out well enough, that's the other thing. You have to pick out that need well enough. If you misjudge the market or something, you could be driving down a, you know, endless path that the market doesn't want and you don't want as well. And then it's a complete failure. But he does say, if you pick what the market loves and use that to make your money really quick, I guess kind of like he did when he sold his website. He made a ton of money, and then he was able to live on his terms. So he even says in this interview, I don't care about limousines. The last thing I wanted to do was have a limousine company, but that was my path to my millions. And then after I sold that website and made my money, then I could do whatever I wanted. So he went down one path that wasn't necessarily his desired path, and went, you know, kind of on a roundabout way to get where he wanted to be. So I can see that working, but like I said, if you end up going down the wrong path and it's either something that you don't succeed at and you don't like, you failed in both ways. And then,
so you're saying that you're on kind of the path that, hey, you got to love what you got to have, that idea that you're excited about, and then you got to find the market for it, and then you go pursue that. You're not looking you're not reverse engineering that and looking for a problem and then hopefully getting excited about that.
Yeah, and I can kind of relate this to maybe keyword research when you're building a niche website. You know, a lot of the keyword research and affiliate programs, you can do all kinds of keyword research and find all sorts of keywords that have absolutely great statistics if you're looking at it from the standpoint like, yeah, this keyword gets lots of traffic. This keyword has a super high cost per click. You know, there's all these great reasons why this would be a super great keyword to focus on for my niche website. But then you have to determine, is this something I want to write about? Is this topic about preventing beetles from infesting your house or whatever this random topic that gets great searches online and has great keyword competitiveness, you know, everything's favorable, but it's not something you want to write about at all. Well, that kind of fits the same mold of doing what the market wants, but not what you want. Where do you find that internal motivation to, going back to the niche website comparison, where do you find this motivation to write 5 or 10 articles and write a new article every week for this topic that you have absolutely no interest or no care about, but you know that's where the money's at? I don't know. It seems to me like having motivation for doing something you don't really love, unless you can see that, you know, millions at the end of the tunnel, to me, it would be hard to stay motivated.
Well, I know you're personally, you're trying to build up some sites, and we'll get into those at some other podcast, but you're touching on various different topics, which some of them you may not have experience in, but you're trying to sell affiliate products for that. And if you don't have experience in that, should you be doing that? Because, I mean, if you have no experience in it, how do you know you're even passionate about it or even if you should be doing it?
Well, and I guess kind of there's an experience and there's an interest. You've got to compare those two. So some of these niche sites, you and I have discussed some of these niche site projects that I've been working on. And while some of them I don't necessarily have any experience in, I have at least some level of interest in that, yeah, I'm going to have to do some research to prepare content. And at some point I'm going to outsource the content. But I'm trying to get a little level of experience in that so that I can point this website in the right direction and monetize it and try to grow it to a profitable venture. So I think experience and interest are two different things. No, I'm not experienced in all of these things, but yes, I have some interest.
So you're saying that, hey, if I have an idea about whatever, underwater basket weaving, which I have no idea what it even is, I should just, if I see that need, I should go for it, even if I just have a little interest, and then hope that I'll be able to keep producing content for it. I don't see how that would work, though. If you have no experience in it, you have no background, you have no stories with it, so that, yeah, you can write general articles about stuff, but...
Well, we're kind of straying from the topic here that we're covering, but to answer your question, yes, these niche websites, a lot of the ones that people make are just junk where they're throwing up random information about these products or about this keyword that they're trying to advertise. There's a little stretch there as far as being able to write compelling information. Yeah. So, and that's why I say we're straying a little bit from the topic. And I was just comparing it to keyword research, whereas the same thing where he talks about doing what other people love, not necessarily what you love, because that's the way to making more money. Same thing. If you're going to try to build, and let's stray away a little bit from these junky niche sites and say you're trying to build an authority site. And so maybe it's not such a long tail keyword as keeping beetles out of your house, but maybe it's a much more competitive keyword, but you still feel like it's something that can be developed into an authority site that could actually be super monetized. But if that's something that everyone else loves except for you, that's what I'm saying. It's hard to do something that you have no personal motivation for. In the same sense, MJ talks about doing things that other people love and other people have interest in, regardless of your level of interest. So to me, it's the same way. To provide self-motivation for this topic or this venture that you have no interest in. He gave one example about he's moving out to the desert, or I guess at that time he had just moved out to the desert, and he was trying to figure out what the internet situation is, because obviously his online ventures require a great internet connection. And he knew that dial-up was one option. But being out in the middle of the desert, there was a couple other options that he could explore as well. And he reached out to all these different service providers to try to find out what they could provide him, what they could offer him. And it took him all a week or more to get back to him. And he said the bells went off in his head at that time. Hey, this is a business opportunity, not necessarily the one for me, but this is a business opportunity for someone to step up their game and take less than a week to reply to your customers. And you're automatically, you know, have a step above all the rest. If you want to be in the internet service game, that's the thing. Like, in all our daily lives, we find things that, hey, this could be an opportunity for someone, but you're not necessarily going to jump on everything unless you have some level of interest in it, to me. Yeah. His idea is that you just find something like that and then just go towards it. But you're going to have some level of interest, even though he says, pick what the market wants, not what you want. But at some point, there's going to have to be some self-interest in whatever you do.
Yeah, we'll have to get him on to talk about that, because it seems like, because like you said, he says, hey, I'm not interested in limo business at all, but he went ahead and did that. But then he just talked about this internet thing, and he said, oh, there's a big need here, but he didn't want to pursue that. So, like, where's the balance there? Like, which one do you pursue? How does that thought process work to weigh all that? But we were just downstairs in your house, and you were talking about how, like, hey, these plants aren't getting enough, or these plants are getting too much sun. There must be some way to, like, block out the sun or whatever from that without having to move all the plants and putting up stuff. And that automatically just thought in my head, hey, maybe there is something that could do that or that could be built. But I have no interest in that. I'm not a big gardener. I don't do any of that. But
that's what MJ's saying. Hey, there's your opportunity. Yeah. Go build something and make money off of it. But I have no interest in doing that, so we're not going to. Yeah. But he would say that's the kind of situation that you need to attack. And I understand that. You know, start by defining a problem and then working towards the solution for it, and problem that you're having and that probably other people are having. But that's not necessarily what I want to do. I want to, circling back to the whole lifestyle business, he thinks it's kind of a joke because your lifestyle might not make you any money, so this lifestyle business isn't the way to go. I circle back to it and say there at least has to be some sort of balance.
Well, one of the I always love the idea generation type thing, because everyone likes coming up with ideas and it's exciting, and you get this big rush when you like think it's like the first time anyone's ever thought of it. And he says, hey, if you want to find ideas, just look at, hey, what you're doing in your life every day. Like, get up from when you get up to when you go to bed, what's going on in between there, and that's where you can find your ideas. Like with his limo business, you'd have to read the book. He doesn't talk about it in this episode. Maybe he does in the first one with Jamie, but he talks about how he was broke when he was like in his 20s, and he would just do all these odd jobs, and one of them was just limo driving for all these rich people or parties, whatever. And one guy asked him, hey, and he, I don't remember what city, in Chicago or something, and the guy asked him, hey, do you know any limo places in New York? And he's in, and this is before a lot of the internet, this is in the 90s, and it's like, well, you got to go look in the Yellow Pages or something. And the internet wasn't as big as it was, like, wasn't the go-to resource for everything. And he realized, hey, this is where I could build something. I could build pretty much a directory for limo companies all over the United States. And it's interesting because, like you said again, hey, he wasn't interested in the limo business, but he saw a need. But then what about those ideas that you just spend time thinking about and you get excited about, and maybe you have, like you said, you have no experience in it, but you want to take a shot at it? Are those ideas worth more than looking at the stuff that you see every day, like daily stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe just the main takeaway from this whole episode for me was not necessarily that I agree with his point of view or his idea of determining a need in the market and then pursuing that. But based on his point of view, I can see and maybe alter my thought a little bit to not necessarily be doing a full 180 as far as looking at a lifestyle design and then working backwards and reverse engineering what my path is going to be to this lifestyle. Maybe seeing that there is this balance that you can find in the middle. I mean, it seems like you're a little bit more a fan of his philosophy than I am.
Well, I'm someone, I don't really know which side I stand on, because I need to be excited about something, because, yes, there's that rush in the beginning and you're really excited about something, but is that going to get you through those downtimes and everything like that? Is that excitement for your product and everything is that excitement going to keep going so you can get back to the uptimes? So I don't know. I'm kind of in the middle as well. He's really kind of focused on, because he built his business kind of like blood, sweat, and tears, sweat equity, kind of like what Mark Cuban always talks about. And I don't know if that's always the way to go, if you need to be eating ramen noodles every night to try and live how you want to live or build what you want to build. So, I mean, I see his point in some ways, and then I see other points. He's always fascinating to listen to. I love listening to him. But we're going to wrap that up for round number one. We're going to definitely put the interview. We're going to link it up right below it. Entrepreneurshowdown.com. Make sure you go over there and check it out. We'll also have the book that you can look at for MJ's. Definitely worth a read. I've read it a couple times. It gets your mind going and it gets your excitement going. So if you're in that position where you feel like, well, I don't know if I want to start anything or want to build anything, this is definitely a book that like gets you rushed, and he's very pointed in everything. So you'll enjoy him. We'll link it up below, and on to round two.
Round two.
And that's right, it is time for round two here on the Entrepreneur Showdown. And this topic we're going to be discussing is from the awesome podcast, Tim Page's podcast. And this is from his episode 25, where Tim is discussing some struggles he's having with some of his current business ventures. And he's talking about his four steps that he encourages others to take, and that he takes himself to get past these tough times and continuing to move on. So I just want to hop right in and follow pretty much the same format he followed in his podcast to talk about these steps he takes when he's struggling and when he's facing some tough times with his businesses. The first one, he says he likes to surround himself with peers, people that won't necessarily fill him up with hot air and give him false senses of encouragement. But sometimes just being around people, whether they're other people who are doing similar things and they're succeeding, sometimes just surrounding yourself with more successful people really does encourage you. I can actually relate to this when I was in my going full bore into my real estate business. Anytime I felt like I was struggling or felt like I had hit a roadblock, if I went to the masterminds or the meetup groups of the other people that were doing it, just being around people that are doing the same thing as you, but they're succeeding. So you can see that, hey, it's maybe it is just me this time, you know.
Yeah.
Just because I've hit this roadblock doesn't mean it's a lost hope or a lost cause. So I can totally relate to surrounding myself with these people and, you know, get kind of help it nudging me on and helping me, continue on.
Well, you hear that all the time. You hear, hey, go hang out with the people that are doing it right or doing what you want to do, but only better. And I mean, I guess that makes sense, but what happens is after a while, don't you just start emulating what they do? And if everyone emulates the same thing, I mean, it just ends up into a big cluster. You know what word I'm thinking of. So, I mean, it's better. Wouldn't you want to hang out with people who are doing something completely different, hear what ideas from the outside, what they see in your business or your ideas? Because when you're sharing ideas with someone that's not the like same mind as you, doesn't that allow you to think differently, think outside the box, and people are telling you the same crap all the time?
Yeah, that makes sense. But when I was in my real estate game, if I went to a mastermind group where I met some people that were really great music producers, yeah. They're super successful. So, okay, I'm surrounding myself with a super successful person that's, you know, great at what they do. But as far as helping me do anything, I mean, it might make me feel good that there's other people in the world that are doing well. But as far as, you know, something that's relating to me and my business and breaking through that barrier that I'm facing, I don't know.
Yeah, but there's a book called The Accidental Creative, and I forget who wrote it, but his main thing is the best ideas are ones that you take two things of the most opposite and put them together, like peanut butter and jelly, pretty much. Two totally different things, but when you put them together, it works. And it's like that, I mean, it's like that with ideas. Like, you can't just have the same people blabbering at you like, hey, you need to, for your podcast, you need to do this, do it like my podcast, do this and this. You need to have people who are doing something completely different provide you and talk to you about that, and you share ideas with them, because that's where you're going to get the new perspective, the new blue ocean. If you've ever read the Blue Ocean Strategy, that's where you get those ideas. And I'm just reading that book. That's why I'm talking about it now. But the thing that goes on is that and they talk about the airlines. I don't remember author's name, so we'll just have to link to the book. But the main thing he talks about is with the Red Ocean, that's where everyone's trying to do the same thing. Everyone's copying the other person, and they talk about airlines. Everyone does the same thing. The prices are the same. The service is sucky and everything like that. But then they have someone like Southwest Airlines who's, they don't worry about, they have cheaper prices and everyone gets to pick their own seat. They don't have all this special junk or anything like that. And they create a whole new ocean because they're not doing what everyone else is doing. They're doing something completely different, a completely different idea. And I'm sure they took that idea actually from, people, they were trying to give like the long distance experience that you have in a car when you're driving long distance. They want that same type of experience that like for then flying, because you have, it's cheaper, but then you have all these different amenities than you do when you're like flying a regular airline.
Well, I am a Southwest Airlines guy, so I'll, I can at least concede to that much to you. Okay, so let's go on to Tim's second step to breaking free from struggling times. He says he encourages you to analyze and accept the worst case scenarios. So, you know, if you're sitting back and you're saying, okay, so I'm struggling right now. I've got, you know, this barrier in front of me. What's the worst that can happen? And then become comfortable with that situation and say, okay, if that's the worst that can happen, I can deal with that. I can handle that and, you know, move on. So once you, you know, you have this big fear of what could go wrong. There's all these things in your head. These problems that could occur, these things that are holding you back. But if you can just take a step back and say, okay, if I look, worst case scenario, A, B, and C will all happen. I'm okay with that. So let's move forward. And if that happens, at least I expected it. It's not completely unexpected. I planned for it and just move on.
Yeah, but you said like one little line there and you just kind of skipped over it. You said, come to terms with it. Like that's a huge, cause everyone's circumstance is different. Everyone's going to have a different, fallback scenario. What's the worst case scenario? In the Startup of You by Reid Hoffman and Ben Casnocha, they talk about ABZ planning, and A is what you're doing right now. B is what you hope to evolve into. And then Z is like your dead end worst case scenario. And they talk about, hey, some worst case scenarios aren't that bad. Hey, you may end up on your parents' couch. How you feel about that, that's up to you. But then some are, hey, if your worst case scenario is you're going to be out on the street and your children are going to be starving, you don't accept that and you don't take that. So when you say just come to terms with something, some things you can't come to terms with. It's, you can't, if that scenario plays itself out, I mean, you're not even talking about failure. You're talking about you just ruined your life and then someone else's life being out in the street. Well, know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, it can be difficult to come to terms with that. I did maybe glance over that a little bit. You know, some things you can't come to terms with, but I really think if this is something you're working at, and you have this desire, whatever you're struggling with, you have this desire to see it, succeed and see it through, you have to do something. You can't just go in blindly. You have to, you know, have some kind of sense of the bad things that might happen. And that kind of does lead into Tim's third point, which he says, make a plan for solutions and weigh the various options. So when you do determine what this worst case scenario is, and you do kind of step back and see what you're going to need to do to break past it, and, you know, what you need to be ready for if the worst happens, as long as you have a plan in place and you have your different options. So if A happens, then I'll go this direction. If B happens, I can go this direction. If all three, you know, A, B, and C all happen and this worst case scenario comes to fruition, I'll have a plan of action for what to do when this happens, because I've, as he says, weighed these various options and I've determined ahead of time what my plan of action will be if, you know, this worst case scenario happens.
See, but doesn't that kind of go against what you, when you call yourself an entrepreneur, you're taking a risk, you're putting stuff on the line, you're putting money, reputation, whatever you want to put on the line. But when you're looking at all these different options, then you're automatically just thinking of, oh, well, you're thinking about the worst case scenarios, you're thinking about, the problems that'll come up, you're not thinking about, hey, if this is a bigger problem than door number two, but you're not thinking about, hey, I could get over that problem. You're just thinking about, hey, let's go with this road seems the better road. It's not, hey, you're not weighing the risk versus reward, which is what most entrepreneurs are known for. They're weighing those. Here is, you're more weighing, what may be, and this goes for each person differently. What may be the easiest way? Which way may not be as embarrassing? Or which way may my parents actually say, hey, that's a good idea? So, I mean, it sounds like you're making a plan to make a plan. And
well, and I think maybe this is what Tim is getting at here, because I know he is, you know, an independent entrepreneur now, but he has had some experiences in the past with companies that he was working for and corporations. So maybe he is applying the anti-entrepreneur planning process to this. So that's kind of how I read this. You know, like you said, a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, are willing to risk it all. Or are willing to be extreme, but the failure rate for small businesses, it's pretty high. Not a lot of them succeed. So maybe he is trying to transport a little bit of this mindset of the big business operations to his small business. So that kind of leads me into number four. Tim says his fourth step to thriving in tough times is to recognize the possibility and also the high likelihood that this struggle is simply a door opening for a greater opportunity. So he's saying, maybe, okay, I've been going down this path. I'm struggling with it. Maybe this is my sign that if I take a left on this road and kind of mold it and shape it into this new opportunity, maybe this new opportunity is going to be way better than where I started. So just because I'm struggling at this, I can use it and leverage it to go down this new path.
Yeah. So he's like pretty much talking about always be evolving and everything like that.
I think he's talking about always being evolving. The same episode, episode 25 of the Awesome Podcast, Tim does talk about a couple different things that he's working on. He's got a lot of projects going on, or a lot of coals in the fire, if you will. He's working on his first product. He's got his Forever affiliate program going on. He's got a new Fiverr gig. He's doing podcast consulting, and now he's working on freelance writing as well. So Tim is talking about in this episode something he's currently struggling with. He doesn't really talk about any specific struggle that he's having, but he's just talking about, in general, he's struggling with something. So I can only guess that some of these new projects he's working on have evolved from, you know, this current struggle. And this, whatever this struggle is, they might have led him to one of these more successful ventures that he's, you know, now embarking on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at all the different stuff that he does, and it looks like he's doing like five or six different things, and it's like he's talking about, like recognizing possibilities and how much like greater opportunity that is, but he's doing all these different things, and it seems like he's kind of going against what he says. Like he's talking about he's putting work into Fiverr gigs and stuff like that. But I mean, how much opportunity can you have with Fiverr? I mean, you're getting $5 for whatever you're doing. So I definitely think that, hey, every door you gotta look for the opportunity. I admit that. Sometimes you gotta look beyond the fog or whatever. Or it was like I was talking about before, sometimes you see a bigger problem and sometimes you got to see beyond that problem.
Well, with that thought, let's go ahead and welcome our special guest for this week, Tim Page from the Awesome Podcast. He's coming on to answer some of these questions, and maybe we can throw some of these ideas, and Joe, maybe some of these disagreements and that you have with his ideas, maybe we can address them with Tim. So let's go to Tim.
It's time for the main event.
That's right, it's main event time here at the Entrepreneur Showdown. And in today's main event, Joe and I welcome one of my favorite new podcasters to burst onto the scene in recent memory, Tim Page. Tim has one of the most eclectic backgrounds you'll ever see, but I'll try to quickly do it some justice. Tim Page is a rock and roll artist, most recently as a member of the pop punk group Honor Bright. Tim is a former president of an independent insurance brokerage, and if you have a sore back, he also has a degree in therapeutic massage. Tim is an experienced and successful sales consultant and trainer, a job that he still does to this day. Tim currently has a large number of coals in the fire, including product design, affiliate websites, podcast consulting, freelance writing, and even some gigs on Fiverr. Since the beginning of 2013, Tim has been producing one of the hottest new entrepreneurial podcasts called The Awesome Podcast, and has been putting out new episodes almost every week. Joe and I just wrapped up round two, where we discussed a recent episode of the Awesome Podcast, In that episode, Tim talked about some struggles he was having in business and his four-step process to breaking free from those struggles. And that's what we are bringing Tim on to discuss today. So without further ado, let's get on to this main event. Tim, what's going on?
Awesome, man. I got my I have my championship belt on, so I'm going to have to defend it pretty well.
Oh, sweet. Well, I don't know if Joe's much of a challenge, but I'm coming after it.
Dan does some wrestling, so he could take you.
I do. I have a couple coals in the fire myself.
I'm a little guy. I'm only 150 pounder, so it might be easy to take me down.
You know what, though? If it's no holds barred, you bring the guitar, you might be able to use it.
guitar strings for a little strangle. I do know how to flip off the top rope, though, so watch out.
That can be dangerous. So, Tim, before we get down to business, you know, the style of our podcast, we like to get right into the content at hand. But if anyone's not familiar with you or your background, where should they go to find out more?
Best place to go is theawesomepodcast.com.
Easy enough. Now, the question we always start with when we're discussing a specific piece of content is, what was going on in your business or your personal life that caused you to write about struggling and business struggles and breaking through from these struggles? What was it that caused you to podcast about this at this time?
Well, you know, this is perfect time for this too, because I just this morning released, well, as at the time of this recording, I just released the reason why I did, you know, do this episode. I was going through some stuff with my day job, the consulting job that I do during the day. We were just having some tough times, and I started to I guess argue a lot with some of the owners of the company that I was doing consulting for. And so as of yesterday, I actually terminated my consultancy with them. And that was my number one source of income. So it's been a really rough few months, really, trying to get through and make it through while I've been, you know, disagreeing so much with the people that I've been working for. But as of yesterday, I'm officially location independent, and that's what I preach. So that was pretty great.
Oh, wow.
Okay, wow, that's a big step, but it's one that most people that get into our line of work, what most people try to strive for. So whether it's by choice or by force or maybe even a combination of both, the fact that you did it and that's your new journey, that's an exciting time.
Yeah, it feels incredible, and I did love what I was doing before in a sense, but I didn't love what they stood for. So now I get to actually do something where everything that I'm doing on a daily basis is something I'm passionate about, and I know that I'm helping, you know, a lot of other people maybe do the same thing.
So are you still going to pursue the sales consulting field, or is it going to go more towards all your other entrepreneurial ventures that you've been working on?
I'll still be doing some sales consulting, but it's going to be more as part of a rounded out effort to help people build and grow their businesses. So I'm going to be spending the majority of my time focusing on the Awesome Podcast, and I'm also working with another company called Authority Engine, who does they basically do editing and they post the show notes and pretty much make it so that podcasters don't have to worry about all of the really time intensive post show production stuff. And so I'm doing some work with them as well, and that's going to be a big focus for me.
So all the stuff that's not as much fun as sitting here and talking to guys like you, the grunt work on the backside, I guess, is what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. All the stuff that most podcasters don't want to do, we take care of for people.
Hey, can't argue with that. So let's get right into the content that we're going to discuss today. You listed four steps that you recommended people take and you take yourself when trying to break free from these particular struggles. And, you know, finding out that you've broken free from the struggle that you were talking about might add an extra element to our discussion. But let's start out with the first one, which you said surround yourself with peers. You talked about how if you're down or if your business is struggling or if you're facing some kind of hurdle, getting around like-minded people that might be succeeding in your line of work might be a way to help you break free and either give you some different insights or help you change directions. And Joe actually presented kind of an argument to this. Joe, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those arguments like, should you be hanging out with the same type of people who do the same stuff as you, or should you be hanging out with people who do totally different things and try to bounce ideas off people who are on the outside of whatever niche you're in. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, Joe, that's a great point. And I think that there's a lot of merit to that, because what I really am focusing on with that first point is we want to get around people that are not maybe necessarily in the same niche, but just kind of on the same mindset level as you are, to where, you know, they want to push you. They don't want you to kind of slip into, you know, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, a depression or laziness. They're going to push you to work hard, but they're also going to understand what you're going through so that they can support you and kind of catch you when you fall.
So like you can
you're saying, hey, if you go to a mastermind group and they're doing things completely different from you, as long as they're providing support, that's going to work for you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, think about it this way. So Pat Flynn, when Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income got started and he started to build his site and he was monetizing it using AdSense, he went to and kind of got into a mastermind group with a bunch of people who were doing completely different businesses than, you know, his business was. But he used them and bounced ideas off them. And because they had that general business feel, they tossed him an idea that ended up making him $8,000 in his first month and pulled him right out of that, you know, little bit of change that he was making.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of with that as well, but it's just, you see all the time online, everyone's in like their own little clique of, I don't know, one that I kind of got sucked into at first was like the personal finance group or whatever. And they're all just kind of talking about the same crap all the time and everything like that. And they're saying, oh, we're building a great community, but they're all talking about the same thing. No one's sharing new ideas, or no one's saying, hey, maybe that's not right. Maybe your ideas aren't the way to do it. And I mentioned a book during the content piece. It's called The Accidental Creative. And there's other books like Creative Thinkering. I don't know if you've read those, but, like where people get a lot of their big ideas is when they're taking two opposite ideas, like whatever, peanut butter and jelly, and they're putting them together, and it creates just something new and awesome that no one's thought of yet.
First off, nothing compares to putting peanut butter and jelly together. Or maybe peanut butter and fluff, I don't know. But yeah, but yeah, I agree. And the point is not just to get out there and get with a bunch of people that are going to be in the same situation and, you know, give you the same old tired advice that you know. It's just to be with people that are going to support you and kind of, you know that feeling when you get real dizzy and you feel like you might pass out. You ever had that feeling before? Okay, so you feel like you're going to pass out, but the last thing you want to do is fall and hit your head, but you also don't necessarily want to go down lightly. You just kind of want to stay on your feet and get everything going. So as you're going to fall and pass out, you get somebody who kind of catches you and then makes you stand back up. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, is somebody being there that's going to be, you know, sympathetic and understand what you're going through, but also be able to say, hey, you know, this isn't, you're not making the right steps by just, you know, kind of whining about it. You know, get it off your chest and then turn it around, figure out what you need to do, and, you know, kind of get back on your feet again. So, yeah, it could definitely be somebody in a different field of work, or even somebody who's in a different life situation, as long as they're going to be kind of a little pushy in helping you out.
That makes perfect sense. And that kind of expands a little bit more on what that means. Surround yourself with your peers, not necessarily peers in, like you said, in your field, but peers that are successful or have successful ideas that you can lean on. So that's definitely good. Let's move on to the second step that you discussed, which is analyze worst case scenarios. But the interesting part was I believe you worded it, analyze and accept worst case scenarios. So that's one of our questions, is accepting worst case scenarios. Do you mean accept it as in like, okay, this is going to be the worst case scenario, and now let's move forward and figure out how to get through it? Joe and I had some questions about, is there some kind of threshold where once you accept it, you decide to abandon ship?
Yeah, of course. And what I mean by that is consider the situation that you're in right now and consider what's gotten you there. And if everything completely went, you know, downhill, if everything fell apart, what is the worst case scenario that could possibly happen at this moment? So, for example, at that point, what I was thinking was, when I was going through this stuff, was, okay, so let's say this consultancy just went by the wayside. I couldn't find any more work somehow. And, you know, I didn't have a way to make any more money. And I'm married and I have a baby on the way. So all these things considered, you know, I needed to know what was going to be the worst that was going to happen. Well, the worst case in this case would be I'd have to get some support from friends and family. You know, we'd have to figure out a situation that we could afford to live in, considering that my income had gone down. I'd probably have to grab whatever quick job that I could grab. And then once I figured out what the worst case scenario was, it's easy to see it and go, well, you know what? Although that's bad and that's not ideal, it's, you know, it isn't like life ending. You know, I'm still going to be around. I still have my wife. I still have the baby on the way. And, you know, I still have some skills that I can build towards in the future. So when you allow it to be a possibility, like, hey, if this happens, well, that sucks that that happened, but at least, you know, at least it's not worst. You know, at least we're, you know, the world isn't coming to an end and I'm not getting, my head's not getting eaten by a zombie and stuff like that, you know?
Okay, so I'm a new entrepreneur. I have a great idea. I quit my job and I look at my worst case scenario and it could be I'm going to be broke and my credit score is going to be shot, da da da. Is there a certain point where you say, okay, your passion for this area, this idea, entrepreneurship in general, whatever, is great, but I think the worst case scenario kind of outweighs that, so you should just dump that idea and go to something more safe. Are you on that more safe side? Are you saying, hey, go for your, what you love, go for your passion, go for all that stuff that you hear?
Well, I'm on a little bit of both because I think entrepreneurship is calculated risk. And if you're not taking calculated risks, then you're not really an entrepreneur, I think. But if I'm that person and I'm going to jump and I'm going to become an entrepreneur for the first time and I'm going to quit my job, I'm not quitting my job until I can sustain myself and I've proven that I can sustain myself through the business. So I think that this is definitely a situational thing because I couldn't make a jump until I knew that I could sustain myself because I've got a family to feed. But if, you know, if I'm an 18-year-old kid fresh out of college, lives at home with mom, hey, that's awesome. Take that jump. Give it a shot. You know what I mean? So it's definitely situational. But yeah, I also think to kind of answer the other side of your question, which was, you know, is there a time to abandon ship? There is a time to abandon ship. And I think that's for you to determine. But if you're doing something and you're not passionate about it and you've tested the marketplace and you've asked your customers to prove that it's something that they want, not by saying, yes, I would buy that, but by actually getting the credit card out. And if you're not getting people to take out their credit card and things aren't working out, yeah, you need to either pivot or you need to shut it down and move on to the next thing.
That's interesting that you kind of your whole answer to that, because it somewhat relates to an observation that Joe and I made when we were talking about this particular step. And Joe said, well, it kind of looks like Tim's philosophy in these steps is almost the anti-entrepreneur approach to it. You know, it's not as much about taking risks. It's more calculated. And I said, well, it could be Tim's background. You know, he's had some corporate experience, whereas a lot of the entrepreneurs are those 18-year-olds that from 18 on, they've just been taking risks and, sometimes it succeeds. But Tim's approach looked a little more like the corporate approach almost. Do you agree with that, or did we misread it?
No, I think in a little sense, being an entrepreneur, it's okay to use some corporate methods because they got where they are because they do take calculated risks. So the difference is you can be a gambler or you could be an entrepreneur. A gambler just takes a gamble and says, I'm going to go out and do this and it's going to work and hopefully it works. And if it doesn't, well, that's the end of the world. But, you know, an entrepreneur says, here's the options that I have right now. I can do this, 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 or this. I can do a combination of all those things. Here's what could happen if I do this. And here's the potential upside. The potential upside isn't strong enough to outweigh the, you know, worst case scenario. So I'm not going to do that. So being an entrepreneur is about taking calculated risks by testing the marketplace, by knowing what could potentially work and what customers are actually going to buy, based on their needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when should you be doing this analysis of worst case scenarios? Should you have the idea and then start thinking about all the different steps, or should you go through the testing phase, see how much interest you're drawing in, and then figure out, hey, should I take the next step or should I pull back?
I think you always need to be doing this. In every decision that you make, you need to examine the worst case scenario because, you know, Murphy's Law, if it could happen, it will. So you need to always consider that in everything that you do, in every decision that you make in business. Now, I'm not saying plan for the worst case scenario. I'm just saying be prepared for it, know what it is, and be willing to accept it if it does happen.
Okay, so that kind of leads us into the next step, which was plan for solutions and look at your various options. And the direction we were going to go with this, I'm kind of wanting to change it up a little bit with the new, I guess, call it revelation that this struggle you have made a decision on. So I want to present it to you like this. Joe and I mentioned that when you reach these struggles, you kind of, and you're analyzing your solutions, there's three generic ways you can go. You can treat this struggle as a hurdle that you can just leap over and figure out a solution for. You can treat it as a door that you just need to figure out how to get in, maybe a different way to get in. Or you can face this problem as a wall that you just need to completely turn around and go a completely different direction. It almost sounds like you hit a wall in this situation and you change directions completely from your primary source of income standpoint. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think those things kind of bleed together, because what it was for me was I had options to continue moving in the same direction that I was at. You know, I could have stayed, and, you know, I probably would have seen a lot more profit coming in. But I had to consider, was it worth continuing on that path and not being happy with what I was doing, and knowing that I wasn't really changing anybody's lives, I wasn't really making an impact. So I could be doing those things and still making good money, or I could consider the alternatives, which were I could get kind of a regular job, which, you know, if you've ever listened to my show, you know that's just not an option for me and probably for either of you as well. I could build my consultancy and find another anchor client like I had, or I could really just jump out and say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and make this happen, the thing that I preach all the time. And so I think there was a hurdle to jump over, which I had to do. I had to prepare my life to be able to make the leap. There was a door that I had to walk through anyway, because I had to find the opportunity to be able to support the family. And there was a wall where I said, you know what, I'm walking up to this wall and I'm recognizing that, you know, I can't go any further in this, you know, in this career path, and still be happy and have my wife still be happy. So it was time for me to turn around and go the other way.
Okay, so you discussed a little bit about looking for something or choosing a path that might not be as profitable, but it would be much more fulfilling for you and your family. And Joe and I recently reviewed a piece. It was an interview with MJ DeMarco. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love MJ.
Okay, and so does Joe. But MJ has this philosophy that you need to do, if you want to be successful and maximize on your success, you need to pursue what the market wants, not necessarily what you want. And he pokes fun at the whole lifestyle design, lifestyle business aspect of things. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, he just completely thinks that you should not put any thought into what is going to make you happy. Otherwise, you're leaving all this money on the table. You need to put all your focus on what's going to make the other people happy. And then once you become successful and make your money doing that, then you can go do whatever makes you happy.
You know, it's funny. I've struggled with that for a long time because, I mean, MJ, his book is incredible. And yeah, that's what he talks about all the time is, you know, later you can live the lifestyle, but for now you got to do what, you know, what the market wants and forget about you for a while. And, you know, I've definitely struggled with that, but I have spent the last 3 years doing what the market wanted and not what I wanted. And, you know, to be honest, it didn't get me where I wanted to be. I could put in another 15, 20 years, but do I really want to spend another 15, 20 years being miserable so that the time after that I could be happy? And for me, the answer was no. You know, so it could be for other people. It could be yes. It could be, hey, you know, put in the time, build that business, bust your butt for 5-10 years, and then you're on the millionaire fast lane, and that's great. But, you know, it's not for me. I know that I'm going to be a better father. I'm going to be a better husband, a better friend, a better son if, you know, I am happy in what I do. And, you know, to be honest, the money, although we all are here for money, the money itself isn't what makes me happy. It's what the money affords me to do. So if I could do it now, awesome.
I mean, I'm just going to go from the other side and say, well, hey, if something you're not happy with what the market wants, then maybe you haven't found what the market wants yet, where you're getting to a point where you're going to be passionate about it because it's successful. So could that maybe be it? You just haven't found the right thing that the market wants that you want to pursue that, or you really just think it's all about, I have to love it to go forward or else I'm going to be miserable?
No, I think you can love the process of providing the market what it wants, for sure. I think that's almost a given, that if you can learn to love the process of providing the market what it wants, then you can be happy doing something no matter what it is. But the process that I had to take before with my consultancy, first off, yes, it was kind of giving the market what it wanted, but it was shoving it down the market's throat, as funny as that sounds. It was the process that I didn't love. So I didn't love the process. I loved the concept, but not the process. So that really took it to another level for me. Now what I'm doing, I'm generating a little bit less income than I was before, but I'm doing something that I love, and I'm providing, you know, what I consider to be, and what the market obviously considers to be, a great service. So kind of get the best of both worlds, which is nice.
So,
I love hearing how people's thought process works. So when you have like a new idea or you're weighing options, are you one of the people that kind of plan from where you are right now and kind of look at where the stepping stones will be or where you're going to put them? Or do you kind of take the point of kind of reverse engineering and look at, okay, here's the end result I want. I want to make whatever, $10 million or be on Oprah, whatever, and then work back from there. Which direction do you move?
Yeah, I'm a big reverse engineering guy. I love that stuff. I love seeing the end and then kind of working back towards where I am now.
Okay, that makes sense. So that leads us into the number four step that you discussed, which it's recognize that this might be another door opening. This struggle might just be something presenting a different opportunity for me or a different direction I need to go. So relating this to the struggle that you were facing, do you think that that specific struggle led you to pursue all these multiple ventures you were pursuing and you still are pursuing? Or do you think they were independent of one another, but those different ventures you're now going to expand on because of the first?
Dan, I don't think that. I know that. When I was going through this stuff and I was, you know, talking to people, and I think I mentioned this on the episode, I was talking to my good friend Andy Ritchie, who runs a school called the Entrepreneur School. And it's an awesome place. But I was considering all this stuff, and Andy said, Tim, think about what's happening right now. You're miserable with what you're doing. It's causing you to look everywhere for what you're going to do next, like what the real big next step is for you. And because of that, you found one big opportunity with Authority Engine that I've jumped all over. And then you've also found some freedom to be able to actually push your podcast to where it really needs to be. Because to be honest, the Awesome Podcast up to this point has been something that has been pure what I love to do. And so I've just kind of done what I felt needed to be done. And then I started to realize there's probably a lot of pain out there that I haven't quite started solving. So I'm going to be digging into that mode of trying to figure out what I need to do to solve all that pain out there. And so this is really what it was. It opened up this door for me to be able to do something huge with my business that I never necessarily saw before, because I was clouded by, you know, 12 to 15 hours a day of doing something that didn't make me happy.
Okay, so that kind of leads me into asking, do you think that you overdid it? Like, did you open up so many different venture opportunities for yourself because of this, because you were just throwing a bunch of things against the wall that might stick? I know during our discussion, Joe made a little joke about being a Fiverr, content provider. I know, you know, we're making $4 for all this work. Because I know I use Fiverr as a, buying gigs, and I feel like I'm ripping people off sometimes. Do you think that you pursued more things than you would have, you know, than maybe you wish you would have because of that?
That is a great question. And at first, when I started to realize that something was going to change, I did do that. And I did everything. I mean, I did Fiverr. I was writing articles all over the place. I even wrote one for TextBroker. If you want to get sick in your mouth, something for TextBroker. I tried so many different things. And what it did was, because of this, it forced me to find this stuff, forced me to try all these different things and find out what I could do that made me happy and what didn't make me happy and what brought in profit and what didn't. And so because of that, now I'm crystal clear on what I want out of my life and what I want out of my future. And so now it's very easy for me to channel all of my energy and my focus into the things that I want to do, rather than just kind of do that shotgun approach of just shooting it all out there and see what I get.
Okay, so one more follow-up to that. I know you either were or still are kind of a forever affiliate guy, and also using TextBroker. Were you in the at one time ordering gigs from TextBroker and also writing for other people, or did you at some point consolidate your work so you were actually writing for yourself again?
I still, to this point, with my forever affiliate sites, I have not written any of the content. I hired somebody on a commission basis to write the content for me. So he gets a cut of any profit that those sites have made. And unfortunately, to this point, none of them have made any profit. So I paid him some, just kind of like a thanks for writing and sorry you haven't gotten paid yet. So no, I actually have never ordered articles from any of those sites. I was just writing to see if writing was something that I really wanted to do as more of like a full-time thing. And I discovered that it's not. I like to do it a little bit, you know, from my own blog, and I love to do guest posting and a little bit of freelance blogging, but I found that that's not exactly what I want to do. I want to live in this world of podcasting.
So do you know, I'm going to go back to his Dan's point of when he talked about all the different things you're doing. Or maybe you're just not giving some of these the time of day, because it's like the old saying, I don't know the exact saying, but it's like you're digging 50 holes 1 foot deep instead of one hole 50 feet deep. Are you kind of like shotgunning, like you said, all these different things and just seeing if you're making quick money, or maybe you're not putting enough time and sweat equity into it to see if it would work? What would you say to that?
Well, I did this really amateur hour thing where I tested how I felt when I was doing those things, because to me, I knew that if I wanted to do something long term and I wasn't looking for that short term gain, that I had to kind of examine how I felt when I was doing something. And if I felt that I was doing the wrong thing, then I kind of abandoned that. Because I felt all along with what I was doing before with my consulting, it didn't feel like that was what I was supposed to be doing. It just felt good to get the paychecks at the end of the week. So I kind of took the opposite approach that was, you know, the Awesome Podcast does not generate a lot of income right now. But it feels incredible to be doing that and getting the emails and the responses and getting to talk to you guys and hear, you know, that you appreciate what I'm doing. That really makes me feel incredible. And it feels like something I should be doing in the long run. And I know that the end game is that that thing is going to provide, you know, a solid level of income. So to answer your question, I probably didn't put a ton of focus into the businesses that I was trying, only because I know that if I had to put all my focus into that and I wasn't happy, I'd wind up exactly where I was a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Well, you said you like to reverse engineer. What's your long-term plan that you're working backwards from?
Well, that's kind of still in the process right now, but the long-term plan is with Authority Engine, we basically want to take over the world of podcast editing, and we want to be the number one source for anybody to go to if they want to, you know, grow their podcasting brand. For the Awesome Podcast, I want to help 500,000 entrepreneurs build a profitable business. That's my goal.
That's
a good goal. Yeah, especially we'll raise our hands to be two of those numbers to turn profitable at some point. Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy to hear that. Love to help you guys.
All right, so to kind of tie a bow around the specific content piece we're discussing, it's been about a month at the time of the recording since you released that initial podcast about struggling and the four steps that you use to break through. If you could kind of do, say, you know, a minute or two follow-up episode to follow up and look back on that, and maybe if you missed anything or you want to add anything to any of the steps based on your experiences since then, what would you add to that, or what would you say?
That's a tough one. I'll add one that's a little bit not in my usual manner, but I would add, in the morning, take 10 minutes for yourself and don't do anything. That's what I would change. And it's hard to do when you're working 15-hour days and then you're also trying to build a brand. But it is so crucial to take 10 minutes for yourself and just sit and be quiet and don't think about anything and just kind of put your mind at ease and just exist. And it sounds really hokey and new agey, and I'm not a big fan of the hokey new agey stuff. You know, I love Tony Robbins and all that stuff, but for me, a lot of that stuff was kind of already built into my nature. But to just sit and be quiet for 10 minutes and just not let anybody interrupt your time is really difficult. But if I had added that when I did, then I think I would have found a lot more peace, and I would have, you know, kind of recognized that, you know, this is my life that I'm trying to change. And so if I want to change it, I have to, you know, be prepared for everything that's coming up. And that quiet time has really helped that.
Is there a specific, I don't know if you'd call him a guru or an author or somebody that gave you that idea before you started, or did you just kind of fall upon that on your own?
That was once again from Andy Ritchie. I asked him what he does to get through his really stressful times. And that was his big thing. He said in the morning he works out. He meditates, he eats, you know, a meal that he really loves, and he drinks tea. And those things help keep him calm and centered throughout the day. And so I'm not a giant tea drinker, but I do like to work out in the morning. I love to eat a big breakfast. And so I added the, not quite yoga, but I kind of added that quiet time in, and that helped a lot. So
Okay, that's cool. There's one book I would recommend if anyone's interested in kind of looking deeper into this whole mourning thing. The guy's name is Hal Elrod. I actually heard him on Mixergy not too long ago, and he wrote a book called The Miracle Mourning, and the whole book is about things to do in the morning, to almost the same thing, but it's really good for people that are looking, you know, to make the most of their morning and practice that.
Andy loves Tony Robbins. That's kind of his guy. And Tony Robbins has like the power hour. So that's I think that's where he got that whole idea from.
So are you one of those that you're early to bed, early to rise type people?
Yeah, but I don't think that's because of business. I think I'm just old.
Oh, don't say that. That makes everyone feel old then.
Yeah. No, I just I do get up really early every day, and I feel better when I get up. When I sleep and I feel like crap. So, you know, I definitely like to get up pretty early, and I usually just go to bed early because I'm exhausted by the end of the day.
Well, I mean, it's been proven that if you're going to bed early, you're getting your 8 hours of sleep and you're waking up early and you're not just going straight to work, but you're actually getting something constructive done, maybe just something you enjoy doing. I mean, that more successful people are those type of people rather than the people who stay up till 5 a.m. and get up at noon or whatever. So I think you're on the right track.
Thanks, Joey. Yeah,
and Tim, I don't want to cut you off, Tim, but I think that you'll be getting a little earlier mornings and a little later nights come October. I don't know if you're looking forward to that part as much, but I think it's going to be there for you.
I don't know if I'm looking forward to it yet, but I'm really looking forward to our son. So I could deal with all the other stuff because I get to be a dad, so that's so freaking exciting.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've taken enough of your time. We've done a great job at analyzing this post, and it's actually fantastic that we caught you now to be able to get a follow-up on how that situation has somewhat played out. Is there anything else we missed on this topic that you think is important for people to take away?
No, I think people just need to know that these times are going to come, be prepared for them, and know that there's another side. I mean, use this as an example because, you know, the other side is usually better than you went in.
Okay, great. So, Tim Page, The Awesome Podcast, tell everyone where to go to find out more about the podcast and what's to come from The Awesome Podcast.
Well, we've got all the show notes and stuff like that are up at theawesomepodcast.com. I haven't done a lot of writing there, but I'm going to be changing that in the near future, although I've been saying that for like 6 months, but I'm working on it. And then, you know, the show is also on iTunes and Stitcher, and if you have a BlackBerry, it's on the BlackBerry Marketplace as well, so you can check that out. And things to come in the future, just more interviews, really focused, specific interviews, because what I've been getting asked is not to just go over the general overviews of things, but really to get in depth and learn how to do specific things. So, you know, I've had a few people on like the Empire Flippers and Spencer Hawes and Tom Ewer who came on and actually talked about how to do the businesses that they do. So you can listen to one of these shows and you can be in business and you know, very little time and actually start to generate a profit. That's my goal, is to help people be able to actually learn what to do and how to do it rather than just, you know, what a business is.
Mm-hmm. Pardon the pun, but that's awesome that the Awesome Podcast It has all that planned, and I know actually, Tim, from various emails and discussions with you, you actually use the word awesome a lot, so it doesn't surprise me that your podcast is The Awesome Podcast, just as an aside.
It's always been my thing.
Well, cool. We will put all the links that Tim mentioned in the show notes, and with that, we're going to wrap up the main event. Tim Page, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Now, to find out more about this show and to see the show notes, check out entrepreneurshowdown.com. Leave us some feedback in the comment section and let us know what you think. And if you like what you've heard, do us a huge favor and head to the iTunes store and leave us a 5-star review. So with that, for my partner Joe Cassandra, I'm Dan Franks. We'll see you next week.